Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
This is really the bad age. The ignorance is so thick that you'll get secrets, which used to be guarded and only given to certain students believed worthy, can now be just said right out loud and given freely, because even then they still remain secrets. That is an excerpt from Peg Carter's piece in the Sync book. Today is the 24th of April, 2012. This is Will and Doug. And Peg, I'm very interested on your ideas as far as like synchromysticism being sort of a yoga. Would you say that? Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, I do. I think it is. You just put it that way. I never actually thought of it as a branch of yoga, but I think it could be.
I mean, you definitely see that it's a practice, though, right? I mean, is that how you see it? It's kind of an interaction with the environment?
When you get into the different techniques, some of the techniques are very subtle. So the word yoga comes from yaj, meaning a yoke, and it's similar to the word religion, which means that you're kind of integrating yourself into the universe, reintegrating yourself. So I guess even from an ecological point of view or a political point of view, you could say a bioregional movement of becoming back home, you know, coming back to your home and creating paradise, or expressing, I don't know how to say exactly, but that could also be a kind of yoga.
Right. You said that it was like the point of it seems to be, or the favor of the synchromysticism enterprise seems to be to find ecstasy and joy in the mundane and the ordinary.
Right. That's right. And if you could place it in the context of yoga, I was just reading or rereading a famous song by the teacher Shankar, and he's also called Shankar Acharya, and Acharya just means teacher. And
okay.
He wrote a series of verses, and I guess the emphasis there is on not so much on finding ecstasy, but the would be relief from suffering. In other words, finding your way out of the illusion of life, or they call samsara, which is the suffering. So that would be a Buddhist concept too, the idea that life, if you look at it at root, it's suffering. It bases itself in suffering. And that this the teachings and the practices will get you so that you're beyond that. You're not enmeshed in this illusion, which creates suffering.
Pain or suffering would be an illusion then, and this is these mind games that we play are helping us like see it in a blissful manner, or see the bliss within the pain, or just pierce the illusion of suffering?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also the idea of mukti, which is release from bondage. So it would be that there's so many tricks in language, and I guess it also requires an elaboration. But the idea would be that the things that bind you in would be removed.
Right. I like that.
You did a really nice job in your piece of comparing suffering to like dark clouds. And so that the emphasis isn't how daunting the cloud is, but how it's transient, and that the person kind of just moves through the weather.
In my tradition, my teacher first taught what's called Advaita Vedanta, which is non-dualism, and that was in the tradition of Shankaracharya. And that, you know, they have this idea of Maya and of illusion and becoming free of that. And so it is similar, I guess superficially, I haven't really thought it over a great deal, but it is similar to the Buddhist doctrine, which is, all life is suffering. I think that's the first aphorism in Buddhism. But the second part of his teaching, later in his life, he started teaching something called Kashmiri Shaivism. And in that tradition, the premise of everything is bliss. So it's one of those on, off, yes, no, male, female paradoxes that you see, particle waves in physics, a play of opposites. And I remember he also expressed that you can get liberated either by saying, not this, not this, not this, nothing is it, nothing is right, or by saying this, 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 this. Either one is a technique. But I made myself clear.
Yeah.
I like the influence that Jung has had over you as well. I mean, the way that you were using his understanding of the unconscious what am I trying to say here?
I got drawn toward the connection of Carl Jung with synchromysticism through, synchronicities. And one was this, one of the triggers that Jung reported in his, case histories, or when he discussed the issue of synchronicity, was that one of his patients had a dream of a beetle, of a rare beetle. And right as she told him this dream, there was a click at the window, and there was a beetle that came in that was very rare. And he found out about synchronicity in his own direct experience. But this beetle bug, was also resonating with the scarab beetle and this story, The Gold Bug by Edgar Allan Poe. And in that story, there's the protagonist, or the main character, solves a riddle by following these synchronicities. Finds the buried treasure.
Oh.
So it's pretty fascinating.
Wow. That's great. But see, the thing is always with these, with synchromysticism, it's always highly symbolic as far as, like, it's almost dream symbolism. It's always something like a beetle, or I remember Jung's story about the fish as well, and it seems to correlate a lot with dreams. I mean, do you see any relationship with your experience as far as dreams and synchronicity go?
Right. I think that it's kind of aggressive dreaming, which I think is funny, because you think of dreaming as being kind of almost wasteful or just non-purposeful. But it's kind of putting a purpose, an intention, or adding a little something special to just musing or dreaming or just kind of, I don't know. Yeah, and maybe it would be daydreaming. And I think there's probably a better word, but I can't think of it right now.
Well, it's just, it's weird because it's like a dream. Like when you're in a dream, something like the beetle or something like that would stick out. Do you know what I mean? And then that's what people like Freud and Jung would teach. It's like picking out the details and analyzing the details. What's interesting to me is because I am reading Jung's Man and His Symbols now for the first time. That's why I brought up that last question, because I was kind of skimming through your piece and remembered that you quoted Jung in there from that book. Anyways,
conversation...
Let me finish my thought real quick, because the relationship between, like, what's the meaning of dreams? Like, is there a way, the interpretation, because Freud's interpretation of dreams and Jung's interpretations of dreams are two different things. Jung thought that they were highly individualized, and Freud thought all symbols meant the same thing. But think seems to be playing with us in the same way. Like, if you really analyze one dream, it's like analyzing one sync thread. What's interesting to me, too, though, Peg, is that your relationship to the synchro mysticism forum. Jesus, that's so hard to say. The sync forum, goddammit. Anyways, like you believe in this connection, the sharing of sync, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I think the dream element is, is the connection of going into the underworld. You know, going into the things that people don't like to look at or that people overlook. And I think that's also why it becomes ordinary life becomes very rich, because it's what is immediate that's overlooked.
So for our listeners who may not be familiar, could you tell us more about the Synchromysticism Forum? So did you start it up? And then how, just tell us about it.
The person who started it is named Henrik Lemon, and he goes by the moniker Raybeam. And he was also involved with shamanic studies in the mountains of Ecuador and Peru, like I believe other, people involved with synchromysticism, Juan Flores and the people in Winnipeg, they all have this connection with this shamanic lineages with the healing plants in South America. And so he was very involved in that and spent many months in the jungle with various shaman and back and forth on the synchromysticism forum. He made a presentation at a place, I guess they had some kind of conference in the mountains. I can't pronounce the name of the place. And he gave a long series of what he had discovered, what the results of his research in synchromysticism were, and a lot of it did revolve around this beetle, whatever totem or fetish or whatever you want to call it, the beetle emblem. So anyway, he founded it, and I started writing there, and my whole life I've been better writing if I have an immediate audience. It's very hard for me to write and prepare something. I guess it's just my nature that I like to have a dialogue, or I like to have reader. I have like to have a communication with people over what the writing is. It just motivates me. And so that was why it was good for me. And also the way the forum works physically, it's a very good bulletin board system where everything is dated and timed, and you can search. And so therefore it enhances this kind of hypertext where you can really connect things in a different form than a book.
Right.
It's not linear. And almost can be a diary. For me, it became a diary in the personal syncs area. I could write, most people are bored with other people's personal syncs, but I could sort of get into my, have a free rein to write about mine. And, I enjoy being able to insert images. And it's become sort of richer as time goes on, because there's layers and things that I wouldn't necessarily remember, so I can search for and find later.
How long has this been going on, and where could our listeners find it on the internet?
Yeah, it started, and it was just coincidentally on the day of the death of Arthur Clarke. And on that day, there was also a gamma rays, like an unusual gamma rays. And it was the solstice of the spring equinox of 2008.
2008.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And, it's just very, literal, synchromysticismforum.com. So.
Great.
Wow. That's about the time that I found Gnosticism. I didn't know that the forum had started then. Did you have another question earlier that I cut you off from, Doug?
Well, I was going to put her on the spot as far as her piece in the Sync book goes. It's funny because I'm kind of reading the book as we talk to the author each week, and so it's just making the reading of it kind of fun. And so, you know, we're towards the end of the book as far as talking to the authors. You know, one of the last authors that we're getting, and we're just about through this book, but I just want to tell you how fabulous I think your piece is. I mean, and I feel that way about everyone's, but the flow of this is just great. And so thank you, Peg, because I just I really enjoyed it. But so you kind of pose a question about Sweet Earth or Chthonic Underworld, and then in the piece on page 207, you say, so how does one reconcile the beauty of this paradise world, the Sweet Earth, the intelligence of nature and birth from purity, with the raging Kali Mother Earth demon who is only pacified by blood offerings? So how does one reconcile that?
Well, I don't really know. I don't really know. It's one of those. It's just a puzzle or a mystery, really. I think that one. I mean, you could do a cop out, like in certain. I won't make it. In certain drama, they have like a do ex machina, where you know a machine just comes in and just takes the character off the stage, or the stage will just open up and the character will just drop to hell. So it's kind of an artificial ending. So this seems like an artificial answer, but in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a famous line of the teacher, you know, the alleged, you know, incarnation of the Absolute to this warrior prince, Arjuna. And what he says is, you know, mysterious are the ways of karma. You know, it's basically very deep and mysterious are the ways. It's ununderstandable. It's unfathomable. And it's so, you know, it's so intricate and deep and layered and complex that it's very hard to understand the workings of karma. So, and I've always resented, or I became very resentful of the New Age kind of very trivial or superficial way of just writing off all suffering by saying, well, the person must have deserved it, they must have done something. And from a political point of view, I very much think that there is a systematic, elite that are, you know, that are basically enslaving and destroying, you know, enslaving people, destroying the world. And you can't always blame the victim for that. So to me, it's just something that I don't know. And I really got the title of that piece from an oracle. I didn't, you know, I didn't know what I was going to sort of hang everything around or use as a center or use as a MacGuffin to, you know, riff on. And that was what came up. So that there was a reason that I was supposed to bring that up. But I certainly don't have the answer myself.
And that's fine. I was just putting you on the spot.
I like the flow of the piece myself because it's very syncy as far as being able to open up to any one part of it. And there's little... But this is how the Mystic Forum works for me. Like, when I look at pieces on the Sync Forum, and I really haven't, like, spent much time logging on and leaving, but I have come across it often. People have threads on there. And the way you can just scroll up and see the pictures and what the impact of the little postings have on you when it's put together by different people is really interesting to me. It's funny because I just watched or looked at the post by Mask of God last night, .blogspot.com, I think, is the address. Is that right, Doug? Is that the address of Mask of God?
Maybe.
Yeah, both of you guys are authors. Of Peg, you're a member at Mask of God, or no? No, she's not, is she? But anyways, besides that, that post had to do with planes, like the flying over and over is what they were posting up, picture after picture of how that related. And Peg, you sent me a bunch about planes recently, like the whole no no playing theme seems to be going very strong for me in my personal life, and the fact that that's what you're on right now really interests me. I mean, can you talk a little bit about what you've been working on? Because you have a YouTube channel as well, correct, where you put kind of flowing sync movies together?
Right. I think that before I was involved with synchro mysticism, I was a researcher on 9/11, and I was part of a research group that was trying to spread information about the results of our research or what we'd found by looking at the videos of the alleged plane hitting the towers frame by frame and other kinds of logical and forensic analysis. And of course, the information isn't propagating at all. In fact, we're being attacked by the mainstream 9/11 movement viciously. And I realize that you have to have the proper medium to propagate any kind of idea to, large numbers of people. And the ground is set for certain ideas to be propagated. So anyway, there was different theories on how to propagate the information, and some people, used porn, tried to tag it in with porn, and just out of desperation. And so basically, I wanted to write about the 9/11, but I didn't know. No one wanted to hear. I was thrown out of every forum and every 9/11 forum, every leftist, you can't write about it. They will block you. They will throw you off. So there was this opportunity on the synchromysticism forum where I could talk about the sinks around the 9/11, and I could talk about my research, and nobody is going to stop me.
Mm.
So that was part of what drew me there. And also, the organizing principle for me, and if you just want to riff on something, you can just do kind of all kinds of synchronicity kinds of riffs, and people might not feel grounded by that, or they might feel, well, that's very whimsical, that's very arbitrary. And I feel that the, the people like Jake Kotza, who I really was extremely inspired by his videos and his work, and I still am. His organizing principle, in my opinion, is the inner state, that inner state of love and perfection that he feels. And so everything goes back to that bliss and that devotion and love for, the self or whatever you want to call it, the experience of life. And that isn't the right, sentence for describing it. But anyway, that's the organizing principle, and that's what keeps it from being just a riff, just a, dreamy, meaningless, tangent. And for me, the organizing principle was to try to express the results of my research and to try to get people to understand the deception of the 9/11.
Right. But it's interesting because, I've seen a lot of things. The weird thing is I'm writing a post about this right now. I got into this whole theme called Flight 23, and where the original kind of sync started from a plane being number 23. And so it has grown in my head. I have this whole thread about how the plane's numbers signify some planes that weren't even there. There's just no plane theme that keeps coming up for me on and involving different movies and a kind of synchromistic analysis or whatever. So to see the strong push, what did it for me, what really opened my mind to it was September Clues. Have you ever seen September Clues?
Yes.
That movie really ripped me out. I was almost, because people have this anger about there being no planes, but September Clues really sits you down and says, oh, well, maybe what I saw wasn't what I saw. Do you know what I mean? Maybe what I saw wasn't really there. But synchromysticism does that automatically, because when you sit down to a movie, there's like two different ways to view it. There's like the really just traditional movie, and then there's this lens you can put over your eyes where everything has this 1.5 meaning in the movie. And it's that opening your, what I'm saying, like, it's opening your mind, like, to the aspect there is. Like, if you find any anger, when somebody says that there was no plane, and you have any anger inside of you, you need to really check, one does, where that anger is coming from. Why am I so upset at this this opponent to my belief system? You know what I mean? Like, why am I holding on to this plane, that there was planes, that it was terrorist, or at least somebody was in a plane, and not think that it was a missile that struck, or Project Blue Beam, or any of these other astronomical things? But I don't know. September Clues really made me wonder. It really made me sit back and be like, what the fuck? Like, what I used to stand by doesn't really apply anymore based off of the way this guy's explaining it.
Yeah, I think most people, in order to accept it, it kind of has to slip in between the edges. Like, there has to be a way that it can slip in because of their defense system. There's some very much investment in people, just even their memories. People are very upset to think that you're telling me that my memories are unreal, that my precious memories are not real memories. And it's very personal. And there may be other motivations too, but you're right. When people get really angry, and when I first heard about the 9/11, somebody was saying that the fires weren't hot enough to melt the steel or bring down the building, when I first heard that, I got very angry myself. So I know what it's like to be that person.
You're in New York, Peg. Were you in New York in 2001? Or were you were there?
Yes.
What about your personal experience on that day?
Well, I'm very conscious of toxic waste issues because I studied that at one time in my life. I was a activist on toxic waste disposal, and I studied about poison and things like that. So I wasn't one to sort of run down there and look around. I taped my window shut. And then when the smell started coming in, I had a place in the country at the time, and I just left. I left town. But at one point, there was a man who took us down. His name is John Perry, and Barlow. And there was a friend of his had a like nightclub, and he was sorry for the friend because the friend was losing money. And so within a week or a very short time, he had a whole bunch of people come down and have a party like a block away. And there was filters, there was air filters in that party area because he wanted it to be like, we're not going to let the terrorists stop us from having a good time. And there was liquor there, and I had some scotch that I had never had before, which is called, I tried to think of the name, but I can't think of it right now. And I thought, wow, this scotch tastes just like the smell in the air. That smell must not be really bad for you. And I found out later that wasn't the actual taste of the scotch. It was because the scotch had been open and the fumes had gotten into it. Because I tried the same scotch uptown, and it didn't have that flavor. So anyway,
how long into the event was it before you kind of started questioning the?
I was a late comer, and I always wonder about that because when the election was stolen in 2001, I was right on it, and I was an activist, anti-Bush, and I was voter rights, voter march. And my sense at that moment was they're going to have to whoever they are, it's fascistic, and they're going to have to, create something. They're going to have to create some kind of event in order to get their program because, you don't steal power that hard if you want to do, you know, good things for everyone. Because they stole it really, really hard.
That's well put.
and so I feel like I was just get along to go along, and people were just afraid to say anything. I think that I had some suspicions. I wish I whispered with friends, but it wasn't right away. And even when Bush came to town after that, nobody, you know, protested him except for me and this one man named Joel. And so, you know, before that event, there was hundreds that were protesting Bush and the stolen election. In other words, you know, there was no one. So, yeah, it was not until I saw a maybe 8-hour, 16-hour event at a place on Broadway, presentation of Canadians. There was a Canadian research group, and it was funded by a man named Jimmy. I can't remember his last name now, but they had 2 days of experts and just basically dissecting everything to a great degree. And I listened to that, and basically me and my few friends that were there recognized, okay, that was what happened. But of course, the no planes didn't come until later.
Okay, if you're just joining us, it's about 31 minutes past. This is 42 minutes, and I'm Doug, and joined by Will as usual. And today we're talking to Peg Carter, who is speaking about her own personal experiences with 9/11. So we're talking a little bit about New York, and I should mention that Peg was one of the participants in the Think in the City event, which I attended, and I just want to tell all our listeners what a great style Peg has. She showed up to the venue on the Upper West Side on a scooter, so she had her tennies on, but then she also had a backpack with her presenter heels, because she presented a couple interesting films. One of them was a mashup of just a bunch of images from the Synchromystic Forum, but it was fascinating because you just kind of took a whole chunk of time and then presented it as a movie, but it almost became subliminal. But then, could you talk a little bit about that film that you showed, Peg?
It was a group effort on the Synchromysticism Forum. It was everybody communicating with each other through pictures, because many people, they want to be able to talk about synchronicities, but they maybe don't have them, or they maybe don't know how to express them to others to make them understandable. So there's a lot of lurkers on the Synchromysticism Forum. And I think that was why there was a lot of engagement, or there was, you know, quite a few people who kept the ball rolling on this interchange that was just using images. But the images were relating to things that we were talking about as well, or writing about. So there was one of the members put it together and with a song, and took the amount of minutes in the song and divided it by the number of images in the thread. So the way that it was, the rhythm of it was kind of it wasn't imposed. It was just part of the structure of the whole exercise. And so if you're familiar with the images, I think you'd have a different experience of it. If you're seeing the images for the first time, it may be overwhelming. And I've noticed that it's the same thing with the plane videos, with the videos of the alleged plane hitting the tower. If you look at it frame by frame, and when you again see it at regular speed, it will look different. You will see things that you did not see before you slowed it down.
Right.
So that could be very well why that was overwhelming for people to see, because they weren't familiar with the images beforehand.
So, okay. Do you think that the ability to slip things in under people's radar through movies and stuff like that is being done intentionally? Or is it more like of a sometimes and sometimes no type of mentality?
I think that the preparation of the public for particular things is definite, deliberate. If you look at an advertising campaign, you have to do the same thing or progress it very slowly and sort of saturate the idea in order to kind of penetrate people's consciousness. And also being a political activist, if you're trying to organize, to make a slogan is very hard. If I put a slogan out there, nobody's going to understand my slogan. And you can see, I guess there's a picture on my Facebook with Kurt Vonnegut, and he's holding this poster, this placard I made. Of course, no one understood it. It was impeach the deserter, which was George Bush, but no one knew that he was a deserter unless he did research or whatever. So a lot of times if you have a slogan, unless you have the whole context, the whole frame there, no one is going to get the slogan. So these things are prepared over many, many years. A certain way of looking at things, a certain judgment, a certain notion of what's really going on, I think all that is definitely deliberately introduced into people's consciousness over time. I think a lot of these other kinds of syncs that are coming, what we notice synchronicity coming out, is actually a function of the subconscious collective group mind trying to wake itself up. That's how I see it. So there might be two categories there.
Oh, okay. Nice. What do you think about that, Doug?
She's mentioned several times how political she is, and so the curiosity I have right now is, what do you make of this 2012 election season and this kind of strangeness of this year?
I'm much more interested in the issues around the 2012 from an astronomical, and from a point of view of revised history. And also from, the standpoint that I would make as my premise that there was an ancient civilization that we're never told about that was, say, even before the Mayan, that actually made that calendar. And I was very much a follower of the work of Terence McKenna. And I read the book True Hallucinations way long time ago. And I always wanted to go to that place in Ecuador where he had those visions in 1974. And 74 was an important year for me. As far as the election, I think that people even look at it the way they look at it because they watch too much TV, they watch too much mass media. I mean, it's total staged. It's total worldwide wrestling, distraction. And I'm pretty committed to, if I could start a movement, to just start a movement of people refusing to vote, because when you vote, you're actually endorsing the system. You're actually giving it a vote of confidence, no matter who you vote for.
Interesting. And so then you're not going to get wrapped up in Romney and...
I don't even know who he is. Really, I don't even read the mainstream news or watch it or anything.
Okay. Well, no, that's. I mean, because if you wanted to come at this from, I remember back in 2008 when he was a candidate. He mentioned that his favorite book was this science. L. Ron Hubbard science fiction thing, Battlefield Earth. That was his favorite book, and so I made this strange conspiracy connection between Mormonism and what do they call it?
Scientology.
Scientology, right? But I don't know. Maybe it's not even. It doesn't seem like those things are there right now. I don't have any sense. The other theme or like thread that we've been kind of tugging on is this idea of 1984, and it's been kind of like a wave surging and then going back down, and then it comes up every now and again. But I'm the rise of fascism. Do you think this is something that is on the rise, or how are you feeling about the state of things right now, Peg, in 2012?
I mean, I definitely believe that there's an international fascist group, and I think that there's been a lot of work put into creating a temper of fascism, like atmosphere of it, through the popular culture as well. As far as I don't feel afraid, and I think that that's the worst thing. I mean, I think perhaps yoga or practicing yoga can help a person avoid fear, but I don't really know why I don't feel afraid, because maybe logically I should. But I do know that there's no benefit in fear. As a matter of fact, if you're fearful, you will do the exact wrong thing that you should. It will make you do exactly the wrong thing. So you have to remain.
We only have a few minutes, Peg. That was fantastic. It has been fantastic. I want to thank you, but I wanted to make sure that you got the opportunity to prop anything up coming that you have down the track.
Right. I wanted to make an announcement about a party. I live in Brooklyn, Bushwick, and there's a open art studios for the weekend of June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Which is the same weekend that the Queen is going to have a flotilla down the Thames for her 60th year of whatever. And my place, my loft, happens to be on Thames Street. That's the name of the street. So I wanted to invite everyone that's interested in synchromysticism and synchronicity and artists to contact me about participating in it and being invited to it. Anyway, so that's about it. It's going to be July 1st, starts at 5:30, and it's going to be a party inaugurating the whole weekend of open art studios in my neighborhood. There's maybe 200 or more artist lofts in this neighborhood, and they're all open house for the weekend.
That's great. And it sounds like that makes you the queen of synchromysticism. Thank you so much for coming on today. But that's all the time we have. So goodbye and talk to you next time.
I was going to say, it's the king. It's the king bee and it's a dog.
Take care, everyone.